When the nugget's value was chalked onto the board above the buyer's desk, the banker led a round of applause, and the diggers chanted his name.
"If you like, we could have it copied before it's smelted down," said the banker, Frost, as Staines made to depart. "You could paint the copy gold and keep it, or you could send it home to a sweetheart as a token. It's a handsome piece."
"I don't need a replica," said Staines. "Thanks anyway."
"You might want to remember it," said Frost. "Your luckiest day."
"I hope my luckiest day is yet to come," said Staines, prompting another round of applause and more admiration and propositions to go mates from at least half a dozen men.
By the time he had extracted himself from the crowd and returned outside, he felt more than a little annoyed.
"I've been declared the luckiest man in Hokitika," he said, as he handed Crosby Wells his envelope. "I've been advised to keep hold of my luck and to share my luck around and to confess the secret of my luck, and I don't know what else. I fancy that the story you told me was not at all true, Mr. Wells. You simply knew what would happen to a man foolish enough to walk into the Reserve Bank with a nugget of that size at this hour of the day."
Wells was grinning. "The luckiest man in Hokitika," he said. "Quite an expectation. I trust you'll bear up."
"I will do my best," said the boy.
"Well, I'm very much obliged to you," said Wells, thumbing through the paper notes quickly, and then tucking the envelope into his vest. "The Arahura Valley is where I mean to buy. Some 10 miles to the north. The river crosses the beach. You can't miss it. You're welcome any time, and for any reason."
"I'll remember," said Staines.
Wells paused. "You still don't quite believe my story, do you, Mr. Staines?"
"I'm afraid I don't, Mr. Wells."
"Maybe you'll spill the beans to your man Carver."
"Carver's not my man."
"But maybe you'll drop my name. Casual mention. Just to see."
"I won't."
"It would be as good as murder, Mr. Staines. He's got a score to settle. He wants me dead."
"I can keep a secret," said Staines. "I won't tell anyone."
"I believe it," said Wells. He put out his hand. "Good luck."
"Yes, good luck."
"Perhaps I'll be seeing you."
"Perhaps you will."
Staines remained on the steps of the Reserve Bank for a long time after Crosby Wells stepped down into the street. He watched the other man thread through the crowd towards the land agent's office, where he mounted the steps, removed his hat, and stepped inside without a backwards glance. 15 minutes passed. Staines rested his elbows on the rail and kept watching.
"Shipwreck! Shipwreck! Shipwreck on the bar!"
Staines watched the bellman approach.
"What's the name of the craft?" he called.
"The Chichardia," said the bellman. "A steamer, run aground."
Staines had never heard of the Titania.
"Where was she coming from?"
"Dunedin, by way of Auckland," the bellman replied.
When Staines nodded, dismissing him, he continued on.
"Shipwreck! Shipwreck! Shipwreck on the bar!"
At long last, the door of the land agency office opened, and two men walked out. Crosby Wells and a second man, presumably a land agent, who was putting his arms into his coat. They stood talking on the porch for several minutes. Presently a small 2-horse cab came clopping around the side of the building and stopped to let Wells and the land agent climb aboard. Once they were seated and the doors closed, the driver spoke to the horses, and the small vehicle clattered off to the north. Accidental dignity, in which two chance acquaintances are reunited, and Edgar Clinch is less than pleased. Mr. Edgar Clinch proved a guide both solicitous and thorough. During the short walk from Gibson Quay, he maintained a constant and richly detailed commentary upon everything they passed. Every shopfront, every warehouse, every vendor, every horse, every trap, every pasted bill. Anna's responses were few and barely uttered. As they approached the Reserve Bank, however, she interrupted his chatter with a sudden exclamation of surprise.
"What is it?"
said Clinch, alarmed. Leaning against the porch railing was the golden-haired boy from The Fortunate Wind, who was gazing at her with an expression likewise incredulous.
"It's you," he cried. "Yes," said Anna, "yes, the albatrosses. I remember. They regarded one another shyly.
How good to see you again,
Anna said after a moment.
It is perfectly serendipitous, said the boy, descending the steps to the street. Fancy that, us meeting a second time. Of course, I have wished for it very much, but they were vain wishes, the kind one makes in twilight states, you know, idly. I remember just what you said as we rounded the heads of the harbour in the dawn light. I should like to see him in a storm, you said. I have thought of it many times since. It was the most delightfully original of speeches.
Anna blushed at this. Not only had she never heard herself described as an original before, she had certainly never supposed that her utterances qualified as speeches.
It was only a fancy, she said.
Clinch was waiting to be introduced. He cleared his throat.
Have you been in Hokitika long? Said the boy. I arrived this morning. Just now, in fact. We dropped anchor not an hour ago. So recently.
The boy seemed even more astonished, as though her recent arrival meant that their chance reunion was even more remarkable to him.
And you? Anna said. Have you been here long?
I've been here over a month, said the boy. He beamed suddenly.
How good it is to see you! How very wonderful! It has been a great age since I have seen a familiar face. Are you a member of the camp?
Said Anna, blushing again.
Yes, here to make my fortune, or at least to chance upon it. I confess I do not quite understand the difference. Oh!
He snatched off his hat.
How outrageously rude of me! I haven't introduced myself. Staines is my name. Emery Staines.
Clinch used this opportunity to interject.
"And how do you like Hokitika, Mr. Staines?"
"I like it very well indeed," replied the boy. "It's a perfect hive of contradictions. There is a newspaper and no coffee-house in which to read it. There is a druggist for prescriptions, but one can never find a doctor, and the hospital barely deserves its name. The store is always running out of either boots or socks, but never both at once. And all the hotels along Revel Street only serve breakfast, though they do so at all hours of the day."
Anna was smiling.
She opened her mouth to reply, but Clinch cut across her.
"Gridiron does a hot dinner," he said, "with a threepenny plate and a sixpenny plate, and the sixpenny comes with beer."
"Which one is the gridiron?" said Staines.
"Revel Street," said Clinch, as if this destination were address enough.
Staines turned back to Anna.
"What has brought you to the coast?" he said. "Have you come at somebody's request? Are you to make your living here? Will you stay?"
Anna did not want to use Mannering's name.